That's right. Welcome in. Welcome back, everybody, to a Notre Dame football Q&A session edition of the Always Irish Show. As always, you can find the program on YouTube. Do it. Subscribe if you haven't yet. I'd appreciate it. Give the video a thumbs up as well. I'd appreciate that, too. Twitter, search bar, Always Irish, or at Always Irish Inc. Emails, alwaysirishnd@gmail.com. Audio only anywhere you want me. You can get me. Call in, show. 312-988-15. Might be time to fire another one up now that spring ball's over. See what you guys think, big picture. Now, going through DMs, texts, emails, I've gotten a few interesting questions posed to me recently. I figured I'd take a few minutes. I think I got, what do I got? I got 15 of these questions people have asked me. Some of them more than one person's asked me the same question. What a great time to go over them. So let's do it now. Here's number one. What, if any, takeaways did I have from meeting current and former Notre Dame players at the Blue and Gold Irish Players Club tailgate? Here's a few things that stuck out to me. Tyler Buchner. If you saw the picture, I had a couple minutes to talk to him, take some pictures. Here's what I noticed. Laid back, calm, kind of ice through his veins, California cool, laid back, chill vibe that I got from just his presence and talking to him very briefly. Laid, calm, just kind of chill. I don't mind that in a quarterback. In a big moment, to think that they're laid back and chilled out, not letting the moment freak them out, I'm down with that. But I felt that from interacting with him, and I never met the guy before. But when I did, that was the vibe. Now, I also realized damn well, full and good, that compared to me, everybody seems laid back. I get that. Because I'm so animated. But I'm telling you, this guy is just laid back, ice in his veins, cool, calm, collected. I love it, right? Here's the other one. I was talking to Buchner, got a picture with him and a couple other people, and I turn around and almost ran into Joe Alt, and I thought it was Andre the Giant coming from the grave. He is an absolute monster, piece of granite. He is huge. I realize I'm not big, but holy crap. And it makes you real. I was astounded. There was multiple offensive linemen there, but he's the one that caught my attention of being like, you didn't want to stare, but it's just you're not used to seeing somebody that big out in society. I was astounded at how big he is. And it makes you wonder, when you got these offensive linemen that are that big, how can all these O-lines not move people when you're that big? Technique, fundamentals, and speed. That's where those guys make a living, right? It's like you're looking at all those guys that are well over 300 pounds, well, 6'4", whatever, 340. How could they not move people? Well, you got all that bulk, but without the proper technique, being quick off the ball, all of that, it isn't going to matter. So that stood out to me as well. Joe Alt is five of me combined. It's unfreaking believable, that guy. Here's the other one. Malik Zaire, the lucky lefty, old Notre Dame quarterback, was there. He's the one I hit it off with the best at this entire event as far as the players. I met some other fans and listeners, and that was great. But I mean, of the current and former Notre Dame players, Malik Zaire by far is the one I connected to the easiest. It's his personality. Laughing, bubbly, smiling, talking to everybody, introducing himself, taking pictures. He grabbed his iPhone at one point and started interviewing another player. Like, he is just an electric personality. And I loved getting to meet him. And him and I may or may not have some things coming up we're looking at doing together. So some of those plans are still in the works. But I love his personality. We hit it off. Love it. Love it. Overall, the Notre Dame players are so humble, so respectful, so polite. Every single one of these guys, former player, current NFL player, Ian Book was there, Cole Kmet was there, Boykin, Claypool stopped by, all these guys, nice as can be, just Notre Dame gentlemen. They were accommodating, they took all the pictures with the kids, autographed stuff, talked to people. They didn't act like, oh, I'm obligated to make an appearance here, just let me get through it for a half hour. No. These guys were genuine, humble, respectful. That's Notre Dame guys. And I never want it to change. Okay? So I love that. Number two. John, what will you say if we go 8-4 next year? Well, I'm not gonna like it. How I'm going to react exactly will depend on how the 8-4 unfolds, who those losses are against, what it looks like, what is fundamentally causing us to have these losses. But I still don't think even at 8-4 is a worst case scenario. It would deter my love for Marcus Freeman. This is a long-term upside play here. And here I am again saying my catchphrase. Nobody, and I mean nobody, comes into our house and pushes us around, just popped into my head from Rudy. But also, nobody, and I mean nobody, can undo 11 years of Brian Kelly in 6 months. Nobody. It's not possible. Recruiting is Freeman's ace card to hold. I'm giving him 2 to 3 to 4 cycles before I'm fully judging him. Tell me that's not fair. Tell me it's not fair. You got to let him build this roster in his image, with his recruiting vision, with his recruiting effort and operation, with the effort he puts in and demands from everybody else on that staff. All right? Freeman's a long-term play. Everybody knows Freeman's here to, Kelly got us to a certain level and we plateaued. Freeman's job is to get us over the hump. I didn't say it was going to be next year. There's work to be done. Give the guy a couple cycles to build this out his way. And while we're going to do two things at once, while he is stacking these recruiting classes that are going to be of a higher level than Kelly's, he's also going to be fine-tuning the ins and outs of being a day-to-day head coach, which is all going to be new to him. He's got to learn that. All right? So, I will not love 8-4, but are we dealing with having no quarterback because Buckner's hurt or like all these issues with major injuries and major areas that make it almost impossible for us to compete? Like, there's a lot of things in there. Who are these losses to? If you're losing to Ohio State and Clemson, that's different than if you're losing, even with the first-year coach, losing to teams we have way more talent than. I look at those and weigh those differently. I think 10-2 would be a solid first year for Freeman. Anything better, then that means that the learning curve for him to be a head coach is going to be shorter, and we're going to get our result we want sooner, right? But if he could keep that double-digit win thing going in his first year learning how to do all this, that's a good start. I think that's a fair judgment of what a good start would be. Anything more than that is glorious. Just glorious. Number three, what if Brian Kelly lands Dante Moore to LSU? I'm going to tell you this. If that happens, my show's going to be very entertaining. I promise you that. It's going to be a very lively episode here in the Always Irish studio. It would be peak petty Brian Kelly, ego Brian Kelly, to know the priority Dante Moore is for Notre Dame and all of us. Peak BK would be for him to put in proper effort to recruit an elite quarterback to pull this guy there to make us mad. I could see him doing 10 times the recruiting he did at Notre Dame for elite quarterbacks on this guy just for the reason to make us mad. He's petty. Brian Kelly's petty. So he's going to try everything he can to piss us off by landing this guy. Oh, you can't. I can't recruit quarterbacks. Watch this. I'm going to get the guy you want. That is peak Brian Kelly. And the worst part of it, the part of it that's going to make me the maddest is the LSU people are going to say, John, I thought you said that Kelly couldn't recruit and that's why you were fine with him leaving. Looks like he did a good job here. And they are not going to be receptive to my response that this is a unique quarterback outlier with Brian Kelly's pettiness as the main driver and accelerant of this effort that is atypical of every other recruiting effort he's ever put in. Brian Kelly is that ego petty that I could see him pulling out all the stops on this one just to wear out my hairline. Would be a really entertaining episode, though. It'd be fun for you guys to watch me get all mad about it, probably. Oh, number four. John, would you go to watch Notre Dame play Michigan at the Big House for $1,000 cash and free accommodations? Travel, lodging, hotel, entertainment, tickets to the game, and $1,000 cash. No, not interested. I'm not going there. Not now, not ever. Let's move on. Number five. Did I see the gift Marcus Freeman sent to season ticket holders thanking them? Yes, I did. And it is pure class. Just Marcus Freeman is pure class. So in case you're unaware of this or didn't see it on Twitter, Marcus Freeman sent a package to every Notre Dame football season ticket holder thanking them for their season tickets, supporting them, has an iPhone thing in there, a charger, a nice letter, a leather-bound case, all of that just to say thank you for supporting us. It is just a class thing to do, a classy thing to do, all right? When Brian Kelly was around, the only thing you got from him was ulcers. This guy's sending you thank you letters for supporting the team. All right? Class act. It's things like this that aren't expected, that nobody expects you to do, but you do it because you feel it's the right thing to do. Those are the kind of things that make people want to watch you succeed. This is so classy, dignified. It is the epitome of Notre Dame class, Marcus Freeman, doing that for the season ticket holders. I love this guy. Love him. All right? Number six. I've kind of been down this path before, but I guess we'll do it again. How can I possibly say I'd be okay with Freeman starting 0-2? I've been getting this question a lot because I've been saying I'm not going to freak out if the bowl game was the bowl game. And then if we lose to Ohio State, technically he's 0-2. And I've been saying it isn't going to affect me, my outlook that much on Freeman. How can that be? You're the guy who's got to win every game and you lose it every time, whatever. Here's the thing. It's not great and it's not okay to start out 0-2. But there are bigger picture things involved here, and it isn't that simple as just the record. What do you mean? You're making excuses. I already went over this 50 damn times. The bowl game was a totally bizarre, unique dynamic. You had a coaching staff in flux, half the guys maybe staying. Half of them, you didn't know if they were staying or going. Some of them, it looked like they were staying, but they didn't know if they were. Some of them looking for their next move. Freeman was making the national tour of media, doing all the things you got to do as the new Notre Dame head coach, all while preparing for a major bowl game in 3 weeks. Roster was in flux. You had a lot of... There's just a million weird mitigating factors to where that bowl game, I just don't take that seriously on the negatives of Marcus Freeman. I just don't. The dynamics were so bizarre, and the timing was so bizarre and atypical. I'm not putting that all on Freeman and look questioning if he could do this because of what happened. I'm not. All right? Similarly, it just so happens that he gets this job in his first game is against a great historical program and currently recruiting program, Ohio State, at their place. His first game officially as head coach, all on his own. So, that Ohio State's one of the best, what, three, maybe four programs going right now? Top three? So, again, I want to win. I don't feel like dealing with the Ohio State people running their mouths. But if it doesn't go our way, I'm not freaking out. It's his first game, all right? So, it isn't just as simple as boiling it down to 0-2. You got to look at the circumstances. Freeman is a long-term upside potential play. And the upside is a title. The upside, unlike with Kelly, is a legitimate chance at a title. All right? Have a little bit of patience. And if you need to feel better about it in that moment, look at the recruiting. No, you got reinforcements coming. Not Kelly's either. A different cut of kid. So I look at it different. It's not just 0-2 and it's that simple to me. I don't look at it that way. I don't think it's fair or right. Too many things going on. Number 7. How is me buying into the Freeman idea head over heels any different than when I ripped people for buying into Brian Kelly? I kind of don't understand this question. But number 1 is personality. One's likable and genuine and the other isn't. That automatically breeds good feelings. All right? That I like one guy's personality and the others I didn't. So I'm predisposed to be more open to the guy I like, who I think is actually genuine and honest about what's going on and who he is. So, personality's one thing, but here's number 2. Recruiting effort. The biggest knock on Brian Kelly was that, and the biggest benefit of Marcus Freeman is that. That breeds me wanting to buy into you more as well. Here's the 3rd thing, and the main reason that I don't think this question's phrased right or is quite fair. You're talking about me not liking Brian Kelly when you started seeing me on Twitter and on YouTube 4 or 5 years ago. That left the first half of Brian Kelly's tenure when none of you guys knew me. And I was yelling to myself instead of into a microphone or on Twitter. So, you can't ask this when Freeman's just starting, but I have 11 years of Brian Kelly scar tissue, right? I gave Brian Kelly all the chances in the world when he first got hired. I thought at that time, if we weren't going to get Urban, he was the next best thing for Notre Dame. I genuinely believe that and was open to it. He did have some exciting offensive stuff going on with the quarterbacks at Cincinnati. I liked that. So, if you weren't going to get Urban back then, this made sense. This made sense. But it stagnated. It stagnated. And even Brian Kelly agrees. That's why he's no longer here. I have no bad scar tissue with Marcus Freeman yet. So me believing in him, it's no different. I believed in Kelly. I didn't dislike Kelly when he first started at Notre Dame. It took me years to realize Kelly was never going to get over the ultimate hump. Took years. I gave him all these years before you guys knew me to let him win me over. And he never could. Never could. Then 2016 happened, the bottoming out. I start hearing from everybody. He's never going to recruit enough to get it where it needs to be. He's just not willing to put in the time and work and make all the other guys on the staff do that. I don't have that scar tissue with Freeman. But I have not always been down on Kelly. I gave him every chance in the world. How many decades am I supposed to do that before I'm sick of it? Number 8. What would I think if Notre Dame played LSU soon? I would imagine, based on the schedule that LSU's not on in the foreseeable future, that this would be a high-profile postseason game. It would be a media frenzy. If there is ever a moment where a Marcus Freeman-led Notre Dame team faces a Brian Kelly-led LSU team in the playoff, could you even imagine the buildup and drama surrounding that ball game? Could you even wrap your mind around what that would look like? It'd be unbelievable. And here's the other thing with that. Let's say that did happen. You know what that means? That means everybody was right. Everybody kind of wins then. Because that means Kelly built LSU back up to make the playoff. And that means Freeman's good enough to make the playoff. That's the scenario where everybody wins. Assuming that game's close and it isn't a blowout one way or the other. That means that both these moves were great. That would be a win for everybody. Then if we beat him, be the happiest day of my life. Kidding me? Number 9. What is the worst part about Michigan fans? That they exist. Next. Number 10. Do I think Notre Dame's heading towards full conference membership? If the next AD after Swarbrick opens the books and looks at revenue, it's a very realistic possibility. Also, if all these conferences disintegrate or move into these mega conferences and all that, you just might not have a choice. Some of that dynamic might be out of your hands, depending on what happens with a new potential playoff format, restructuring of all these conferences. My thought is, and I've said this before, it wouldn't surprise me if the angle here is Swarbrick leaves, you get a new AD in there who's more forward-thinking, trying to generate revenue. Maybe for a year he gets settled at Notre Dame, figures out the dynamics, what he's working with. Looks at the more money you would make being in a conference with TV revenue shares, all that, compared to being independent, the NBC deal. If he looks at that money component, which is a no-brainer towards joining a conference, and sees that it's an easier path to make the playoff regularly, I think that's realistic. It just might be where the times are headed, like it or not. And it might be something the new AD feels Notre Dame has to do to stay relevant and competitive, even if it's just because of money and nothing else. So I am very interested to see what happens with the new AD after Captain Jack and see what he thinks about all this. Wouldn't surprise me to see a move be made shortly after that move is made. I don't know. But it's interesting to think about. Number 11. What do I think of NCAA President Mark Emmert stepping down? Here's what I think about it. The entire worthless, incompetent NCAA should join him. Retire, go away, die. Okay? They are worthless, useless, and horribly incompetent at their jobs. Here's the interesting angle of this, and it ties back up to number 10. I'm already hearing Jack Swarbrick's name floated as a possibility as a replacement for Mark Emmert as the entire president of the NCAA. That would be interesting and quite funny. Jack Swarbrick has a lot to say about the changes going on in college football in mass, large scale. He's been all over doing media hits. And he's putting himself out there with a lot of takes and being very open about where things are going, the line between professionalism and amateurism and how that's being blurred, the big money arms races. Jack has a lot of thoughts. So it would be really interesting if Swarbrick's interested and gets that job. But I just think for football, the NCAA is worthless. Anything they try and do is a fail. They are not even associated with the playoff itself. Any regulatory stuff they make is woefully incompetent, just has loopholes, poorly thought out. We all know how they discipline. Certain people get nailed for next to nothing. Other people don't get nailed for murder. It's just a joke. So if it was me, I would advise the entire NCAA to retire when Mark Emmert does. They are useless and pointless, and I don't like them, don't respect them at all. Number 12, top three toughest games next year. I mean, you know how I usually do these breakdowns on schedules and what's the toughest. The easiest way I know how to do it is talent. I base it off talent. In my opinion, Ohio State won, obviously, first game. All the reasons everybody knows that's going to be tough. Okay, Ohio State's won, Clemson two. You might be able to debate the overall talent of number three with a few teams. I'm going to give it to USC. Here's why I think this is going to be a tough game and a big deal. All right? Follow me here. Even when, of recent vintage, USC's been down by their standards, right? We have this winning streak against USC. Even when they've been down, we're winning those games, but many of them are uncomfortably close for way too long for them being down. Now, they're kind of back on the upswing. By no means am I saying they are going to have a complete roster ready for playoff contention just because Lincoln Log Riley rolled into LA. I'm not saying that right away for this year. But I do expect a different energy from USC. It isn't going to be that dead cat feel they've had. So, the way I see it is, some of these games, when they were down and had nothing going for them, were already close. Now that they're on the upswing, I expect it maybe to be even tougher. So that's kind of how I see it. By no means am I saying they are going to have a complete playoff-ready roster next year. No. But they're going to have a fun 7-on-7 throw-it-around drill team, and we're going to have to defend it, right? Here's the other point with USC now. The other point is, whatever USC's going to turn into under Lincoln Riley, Freeman Riley is going to be a thing, given that we play every year. That is going to be a rivalry. You can't start that out, letting them win the first one when everybody's reset with their new coaches. You can't. That's one thing you can't do. You cannot allow this to swing as we're both resetting with new coaches. You can't. Notre Dame is in a much more stable place overall than USC. You need to win this first one. Keep that momentum going. So that's how I see those top three games being toughness-wise. Number 13. This is actually a really good question. Freeman seems to be everywhere to everybody all the time. Is it possible he's taking on too much, spreading himself too thin? Yes. Yes. That is a very real possibility. However, I don't feel that that's something any of us or him or anyone at Notre Dame can know right now. That dynamic is something Marcus Freeman's going to have to navigate and adjust the calibration on as he feels his way on this journey early on. He's going to have to adjust. He will learn quickly. All right, I need to put more time and effort here and have a little less over here. I need more effort here. Here, I'd like to give more effort, but it's a secondary concern and I need to delegate this to somebody else on the staff. Those are calibrations every first-time head coach needs to make on their own terms. The additional kicker here is that there is, quite frankly, more obligations off the field for Marcus Freeman at Notre Dame than there tends to be for a lot of coaches other places. There's a lot on his plate. I know he's young. I know he's in shape. I know he's energetic. All of that. He is smart enough to be able to figure out the calibration, get it to where he could do what he needs to do, but he isn't burning out or giving too much energy to the wrong thing at the wrong time. He'll be able to adjust. But yes, it is a possibility that that is an issue. We're just not going to know it yet. He's going to have to feel it out based on the results of what's going on. Number 14. Being in the Chicago area, am I a lunatic with the Bears like I am Notre Dame? I am not. So, I never miss a Bears game, ever. I can't remember the last time I didn't see a Bears game live. I never miss one, but it is not emotional. It is strictly, I love football, and it's geographical that the Bears are the team, okay? So, I follow them. I know everything going on, the draft, never miss a game, all the storylines. It's just not emotional, right? Let's be honest, you guys. If it was, I would already be dead. There's no way in hell I could live through the disasters that Saturdays have been for me with Notre Dame most of my life. And then I wake up and redo it all Sunday and be miserable with what the Bears have been my whole life. I'd be dead. Dead. There's no way I could handle it. My heart would just cease to operate. No way. So maybe it's just self-preservation. My body doesn't allow me to. The Bears are geographical, and I follow everything they do. But whether they win or lose, it doesn't affect my emotions at all. That actually makes it quite freeing to watch their ball games on a Sunday, Monday, or Thursday night. Okay? But it isn't emotional. It's just not. Can't. I'd be gone. This show would have a ghost hosting it. All right? Number 15. Record prediction for Notre Dame 2022. High end, 11-1. Low end, assuming reasonable health, 9-3. Great first year being reasonable, 10-2. I think that's perfectly fair, assuming relative health. I still think there's a large part of the Notre Dame fan base that is underestimating the learning curve Marcus is going to have to go through to be a head coach once we get into an actual first full season. I just think there's more nuance there that he has to get used to than a lot of people want to admit or acknowledge. This is not a guy with 7 years of head coaching experience coming in here. I expect there to be some learning curves. Maybe some of them don't result in losses. That's the best. The best is when you could have mistakes or things you don't love, but it doesn't ruin you and lose a game. So if you could find some mistakes that you could correct and not have them result in a loss, that's the best case scenario. So high end, maybe 11-1. Low end, decent health, 9-3 maybe. 10-2, I think, would be a great first start for Marcus Freeman. Double-digit wins, rebuilding the roster, new staff, young quarterback, all of that. I think 10-2 would be acceptable. So that's what I think. We got through all 15 questions. That was fun. Let me know if you guys have any more. Send me an email or a DM. Have a good night.